Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Mrs. Lindsay M., and she's coming from the Young People's Group in New York, Pennsylvania. Please welcome.
Hi, my name's Lindsay Miller, and I'm an alcoholic. I get nervous every time. I need to eat crackers on the way here. And my stomach gets, like, all upset. And I pray the whole way. And the young lady that I came here with, Amy, I'm like, will you pray with me? I can't pray enough. Because then I might forget and think that I'm doing this. I have I'm coming up on 19 months. It is not my first time in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was 20 the first time that I got introduced. I really didn't know about Alcoholics Anonymous. I just thought drunks were written off by family members and we just pray, and it's so sad. I didn't know. You know, I just had no idea. And when I came in, I lived in Vegas. I might jump back and forth. I definitely qualify. I'm not really into a huge drunkalog. I don't really need to impress anybody. I'm not hanging out in Alcoholics Anonymous because I think that would be fun to just mess with people. Okay, that's a little bit of a lie. Sometimes I like to just mess with people. But I didn't realize that I was even in the rooms till 6 months. I was just gone, full flight from reality. For me, that meant I thought I was a recreation of the Virgin Mary. I was in, talk about selfish and self-centered. Like, I thought I had something to do with the entire universe. I thought Revelations was unfolding. What, because, like, I'm not drinking anymore, you know? It's got to be the end of the world. So arrogant. So I woke up, I remember sitting down and looking around one day, and I figured it was about 6 months since I had anything in my system, and I go, oh, well, I guess I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm at a meeting. I was in pursuit of the seventh tradition, and I didn't even know it. Money, property, and prestige. It absolutely diverted me from my primary purpose. I pretended to care. But anybody that had a solution in their life and they were practicing it every day could see right through it. And I got all that stuff, the car, that guy. I got everything that I thought I needed if I got all my ducks in a row, you know. And I still wasn't happy. Because they tell me that, like, if you sit here right now and think about all the things that need to be in order for you to be okay, and what would make you happy, just take a moment, or all that stuff, you know, that needs to be in order, and you've already sold yourself short. Because I was told that if I practice this thing to the best of my ability every day, and what I've been shown, I will have a life beyond my wildest dreams. It means I can't even think it up. I don't even know the blessings that will be put in my life if I do this. And for so long, I thought, well, if I don't take care of it, who's going to? You know what I mean? If I don't make everything okay, who's going to? You know, if I don't watch my back, who's going to? I got to get mine before you get yours. You know, and if I have something left over, then maybe, you know. But I've been shown a different way that I reach my hand out to God's kids, alcoholic or not, and I try to help them, and God takes care of my stuff. Because anything materialistically and mundane, it's all temporary. And through working this program, I you know, like, have a vehicle, and I didn't get lost here tonight because Christmas I got a GPS. Because the last time I came, I definitely got lost. We had another speaker, that's how lost I got. And And I'm actually learning how to use that GPS. I yell at it the whole time here. But gosh, it's like repetitive. It keeps saying the same thing over and over again. I'm like, I got it. Okay, left. I'm staying in the left lane. Okay. Just a little too technological for me. But if I want to blame it on my childhood, I all those things that I wanted to blame on why I was an alcoholic that had nothing to do with why I'm an alcoholic, it's so cool to know that, like, no matter what I've been through or haven't been through, it has nothing to do with me being an alcoholic. For me, it can add to my excuses. You know, it can add to my justification as to why I do what I do, but it's not the reason. I was shown in the book and then into action that I have a threefold disease. In the doctor's opinion, it tells me the disease centers in my mind. A peculiar mental twist. So if you think up messed up things that you swear to God, if anybody knew you wouldn't have a friend in the world, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what I mean? Peculiar mental twist. It tells me right there you're going to think messed up stuff. You're not alone. It's kind of what I do about what I think. You know what I mean? The action I take. So I got the disease in the mind. Now I'm allergic to dogs. So if I don't take allergy medicine and I just start playing with the dogs, I start breaking out. So if I don't come to these rooms and try to carry the message, then I take alcohol into my system. I break out. But the funny thing is, I can also break out without it in my system. I can be untreated. I'll go into that. But if I put it in my system, it's no holds bars, because I don't know when I'm going to stop. I'd like to think I know. And when I was younger, I used to say, I don't want to. I will when I want to. But I progressed really quick. And it was to a point where I didn't even want to live like that anymore. And I couldn't do anything about it. And the harder I tried, the worse it got. So it's the mind, and then my spirit is the other part. Something's a little empty. It's like they say, you know, I've referred to it plenty of times, the hole in the soul. I need something that's not seen. You know, something stronger than any substance, any relationship, any fear, anything, any situation. I need something stronger to fill that hole. And nothing, absolutely nothing, and I've tried it all, will do that. I can try to date and get a great job or go back to school or get a new car or get a GPS, but that stuff doesn't make me okay in my skin. My whole life, I didn't realize it, but I was always trying to overcompensate because I never felt like I was enough. And I always felt like, I always compared my insides to outsides of other people. Like, they look like they're shiny and happy. What's freaking wrong with me? They're okay. What's wrong with me? You know what? I need her shoes. That's what it is. Or her hair. Or she's so pretty. You know what I mean? Or all the guys like her. And I pursued everything tangible, and I sucked the life out of everybody, and I didn't even know that I was doing it. I mean, it started from little on up. I was 3 years old, and I came from a house where, you know, mom, dad, I had a brother, a house of unconditional love, and that was my first example of the kind of God that I have today, which is unconditional. There's nothing that will separate the fact that he loves me. Nothing. Like, I don't care what you've done, what I've done, and he cares because he loves me, but I block myself off by my actions, or lack of action. That's the only way, but he's going to constantly keep showing up, constantly going to have people show up in your life, reaching their hand out, and offering God to you. I can promise you that from my own experience. So I'm 3 years old, and I can't take it. I packed up my bags and I'm like, I gotta go. My parents are like, where are you going? I'm like, I don't know. They're like, how are you going to eat? I don't know. And like signs of that little hole in the soul, that little rest. And I couldn't, like they say, restless, irritable, and discontent. For me, that was, I never get enough tension. They love my brother more because he's a wrestler. I told my dad that. I told him I hated him and that he loves my brother more because he's a wrestler. And he was hurt but yet laughing at the same time. Do you know what I mean? And they didn't know what was wrong. And as it, you know, so what happened was when they got to keep me busy. Because I guess you could have diagnosed me with like ADD, ADHD, but that was before the big boom of all the ADHD, where I would have been a little Ritalin head. And but I'm not anti or not, you know, opposed to medication, trust me, I've been on my fair share. For me personally. And I was on it when I first got sober this time. I'm not anymore. But something had to calm me down a little bit. I was so raw. So they got me involved in everything. I mean, basketball, soccer, softball, tap, jazz, ballet. I played the saxophone. I'm in chorus. Like, since third grade, like, everything. There wasn't a moment that I wasn't doing something. And that's what they had to do, I think, to keep sane, because it was never enough. Never enough attention. Never enough, never enough, never enough. And I wasn't treated fairly. And I thought people should know how to act, like even my parents. Like, don't you know how I feel? That makes me feel. And then I'm like 11 years old, and my mom wants to start sending me to a psychiatrist. That was great. That just taught me how to manipulate better. But she didn't know that. She just knew that I wasn't okay. You know, she knew her little girl was just sad, and she didn't know why. And I was just so, well, discontent. I wasn't okay in my skin. Just like I wanted to blame it at 3 years old on outside problems, my parents. And they loved me unconditionally, but I had enough. What I had enough of was being self-centered and all about me, even at 3 years old. So let's just say I've been to a ton of psychiatrists. I can't even count. First time I went to the psych ward, I was 18. 3 days after I got out of the psych ward, I graduated high school. 3 days after that, I moved to Vegas. Because when I was 13, my parents split up, and my mom relocated to Vegas. And what I figured it was this town is beat. There's no opportunity, a bunch of losers. And I'm going to go beat somebody in Las Vegas, Nevada. We have such great ideas. Yeah, I became something, somebody. In my own mind, like a recreation of the Virgin Mary by the time I got to these rooms. So I go out there and I get involved. I went to massage therapy school because what I need to do is straighten up and I just need to back off and not drink for a while, you know, and then maybe I can have a little bit. And I tried to manage that, and I think I was white knuckling it for like 5 months in school, and then it was no holds bars. Once I picked up, it was like, I have to make up for lost time. Yeah, what was I thinking? This is what I needed. You know what I mean? And I met this one guy. You know, we're always meeting guys, everybody. I'll use anything or anybody to make me feel okay. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Because I feel like I had like this beast in my chest, like this, like a pit bull, you know what I mean? Just like at a low, you know, and I tried to pretend. I always tried to be like this good girl, you know, by day, and like some little vixen by night, like I was fooling anybody, you know, and I had to be a good girl to my parents. I wanted them to see. I believe the book talks about that somewhere, you know. I'll show you what I want you to see, and I'll try to be who you want me to be. Whether I'm in this crowd, like with the jocks or whatever you want to call it, and then, you know, the stoners or whatever, like I would be whoever I thought they wanted me to be, and I didn't even know who I was, and I got into lots of stuff, lots of trouble. I found myself drinking 151 It's okay, we do it all the time. It happens. Drinking like 151 and chasing with Bacardi and finding as many extracurricular activities, anything. I mean, because I'm an alcoholic, but I will not lie. There's other things that played a part in my downfall, but actually kind of like a victory, you know what I mean? Thank God I got torn down quicker so I could get here. So I'm a Westcare detox. Mind you, I'm from Penn Argyle, Pennsylvania. Has anybody ever heard of it? Yeah. Well, yes. Yes and no. That's right. I'm in Pennsylvania now. I didn't know that anybody ever heard of it because it was like that big. You know, there's like McDonald's, Arby's, and Burger King. And here I am in Vegas now. And my ego, because they told me I'm an egomaniac with an inferiority complex. I'm rolling into Vegas like I own it. Like you never saw what was coming. And Vegas will never know what hit him. They kicked me out of there. But I'm in a detox. I don't know what's happening. I've lost my mind. I reverted back to like a 12-year-old little girl. I don't know if anybody can relate to that, but I couldn't even. I just felt like a little girl. I couldn't even make macaroni and cheese. I couldn't concentrate. I couldn't. And I just cried, and I was so sad, and I was hurting, and I didn't know how to stop, you know, and I kept doing things that I didn't want to do, you know, but I didn't know how to stop, and I couldn't stop. It was so much stronger than any morals or values that I was ever brought up with, you know, or any convictions that I ever had of who I wanted to be. I became something I never wanted to be, and it hurt. And the guy that I was seeing, I asked his mom for help. She was a nurse. She was also a Baptist preacher. She was a little intimidating, but I wouldn't tell her that, you know what I mean? But, you know, because I'm melodramatic, I got down on my knees and I was like, please help me. And she said to me, are you willing to go to any length? Yeah, I mean, help me, you know. I didn't know what that meant. But I was pretty sure that I'd go to any lengths to get what I needed to get out there. And I guess an example of willing to go to any lengths, that is no matter where I'm asked to go or do, whether it's 10 minutes away or 2 hours, I was willing to do it out there. Why wouldn't I now? But I found out that she was in recovery for 23 years. Didn't even know it. She knew exactly what I was, but I didn't know. And she took me to Westcare Detox on Martin Luther King and D Street in Las Vegas, Nevada. A long way from Penn Argyle. I got in there, and I met him. I met him. You know, the one. And his name is Damien. And he was so bad. Yeah, his name literally was Damien. If like, if that's not a sign, like I don't know what would be. You know what I mean? Like, hello, and I'm like, okay, he's so cute. And he makes you feel like the only one in the room. You know? And I think we're like pretty cool because we've got this thing on lockdown, this detox. You know? He's giving these ones chocolate, these ones money, and he's running the kitchen, and I get to be first in line, you know what I mean? God. And like 2 in the morning, he's like cooking me eggs in the kitchen, you know what I mean? I'm like, we've got this. We are on top of the world. God went to some extreme lengths to get us together. I get retarded just thinking about how retarded I was. He was so charming in all his devilish ways, and I didn't know it at the time, but he had like 47 felonies, and he's a godfather of this pretty prominent gang out there. He's also Sicilian, full-blooded. His dad just doesn't work, and his mom's the vice president of Merrill Lynch out there. And I wonder why all the felonies are dropped in misdemeanors, because they have more money than I thought God did. And but this was very attractive because I'm very sick. I have a severe spiritual malady. Big hole in the soul, big one, gaping. I mean, like, I didn't even know if I had a soul when I came in here. It was just like this little lining. But well, we proceed to get in a relationship, and I'm a good girl, so I wait for him to get out of this treatment program on a mountain. They send him away for a mountain, because that was part of, you know, because if you have a lawyer, there's definitely ways to play the system to not get so much time or penalties. And he's got a great lawyer. He's been doing the gamut since he was like 13. And so I wait for him, you know, and I get this home group, and it's a specific group out in Las Vegas. And I got to go out there again for this Thanksgiving, and I got to go for my year, and it was awesome because the message is actually there, but I just didn't want to hear it. And I convinced them that I really want to help these women up at the mountain, and it's terrible because I don't think they bring meetings up there. And I don't know who I was fooling, but they brought meetings anyway. You know, and I'm going up there because I want to reach out my hand to the women, and I'm lying, and I want to go see him. And so I do that, you know, I go with my home group, and it's like 2 hours away, and anyway, so we go up there. I mean, that's how psycho, that's how, like, deranged I am, because I didn't have anything in my system, but I definitely wasn't treating the insanity. I was untreated. Because there's a difference, and I've learned this through painful experience. It's no badge of honor, you know what I mean? But that I will do the same things sober, or shall I say sobriety, dry, and even worse than when I was out there. Like, there's a reason that we have steps. There's a reason that we have to get sponsors. Because me, what I avail is more anarchy. You know what I mean? My direction, my ideas, and how I should run my life down to the T. I'm saying, like, big decisions or small decisions, I can't run the show. Because if I could run the show, I wouldn't be here. You know what I mean? If we were so good at managing our lives and running the show, chances are we would not be in the room of Alcoholics Anonymous. He gets out of there. We get together. excuse me. So, I am. I'm gonna take a drink of this real quick. I love cherry Pepsi. It's like my new addiction. I'm serious. If I don't have it like once a day, I'm really cranky. I guess the first time that he hit me, I officially signed up because I didn't walk away, and it's not like I didn't know that this wasn't right. But my mind told me, you know, he loved me, it won't happen again. And that's what I needed. I needed him to make me feel better. It was selfish. I needed him to validate me. And if I don't have him, then I can't breathe. You know, and the first time was he put on a Jason mask, and it was pretty intense. And let's just say it got worse. It didn't get better. I was actually sober for 3.5 years. I had sobriety. I was dry, drunk. That's what I call it. Because if I learned today that if I'm working a program, I'm not going to be with a man that beats me. I will find God, and He will give me the courage to walk away. And I was real involved with my home group, and then I wasn't. And I slowly tore away from anybody that said anything about my relationship. I tore away. I wrote him off. I didn't talk to him anymore. Because you don't understand. You don't know what it's like when we're alone. You don't know how he makes me feel. You don't know him like I do. And I realized today that he's not a bad man. He's just really sick. And I can't. And I pray to God he comes into these rooms. Because it was offered to him. He didn't want it. And that's his choice. The greatest gift and maybe the greatest curse that we have is free will. We are not. Nobody's going to make us do this. he tried to, it progresses, and eventually we start using together. And we start getting drunk and doing all that stuff together. And if it wasn't bad, it escalated to the end. And then there was one night that I was out of my mind, and I said, well, why don't you just do it already? Because I'm sick of living like this. Just finish me. I'm done. And I pushed him, and he went to finish me off, you know, in the front yard. He kept trying to get me into the car, but I knew at that point, oh my God, if I get in that car, I'm done. I'm not coming back, and I knew that. And I fought with everything in me, and I managed to distract him and get to the front door, and his dad's standing there, and I ring the doorbell, and I scream bloody murder for help, and his dad tells me to calm down. I plow past him and his mom and his sister in the foyer room, and I tell him, your son's beating the life out of me. Help me. Keep your voice down. You're going to wake the baby. I knew. That's it. I ran into his room, and I locked the door behind me, and I called 911. They picked the locks behind me. They eventually got to me, but I got the call into 911. And God's huge. God was all over that. All over that. Because I wasn't supposed to make it out of there, according to them. But they're not God. And he's bigger than all that insanity and all that sickness and all the abuse and all the pain. He's bigger than all of it. That's the God that I have. And I'd like to say that I got out of there. And I'd like to say that I woke up the next day. And I was like, wow, I see the error in my ways. But I didn't. I came back to Pennsylvania, and I decided to run through some more people, and I decided to use up some more people, and that's exactly what I did until they got sick of it again. And I built up such high hopes, you know. I start doing good, and then I tear it all down. And it was sad when my dad had to his little girl drop her off at in Easton at a homeless shelter. He's not going to welcome me into his home. He knows the animal that I've become. And so I'm there for like a week, and I'm like, I'm just not going to drink. But then I had the last night. This was actually my last drink. I found myself hanging out with a Dominican retired pimp. I don't know how these things happen, but they do. And I remember telling him, make sure I get to rehab tomorrow morning. And I do, and I mean, I was probably, they were real impressed with me when I went to rehab, because I show up with like a bikini top and a wife beater and Daisy Dukes, and I'm like, and I was like, hey, let's get sober, you know, and they sat me down, they're like, do you want to go to the dance? I'm like, and I was still like out of it, like somebody said, do you want to go to the dance? They were probably just messing with me, but I was like, sure. They're like, never mind, you know. I was like, huh. But there's boys. And so I go there, and I was pretty much a jerk that whole time, but something hit me towards the end, and what they did is because I was so flamboyant, I was in a mixed unit, but 4 days into that, they wised up, and they put me on the women's unit. And I thought, such an injustice. I remember telling them, I've felt such a bond with everyone here. How could you take me away from my friends? They're like family. They're like, after 4 days, I'm like, yes. You know? And so there was a guy in that unit that I was chasing. Imagine that. We're about to like recreate the first time, you know? And I'm so smart, I'm so dumb. Anyway, he said something about York. I never heard of this place. Like, I thought New York. I'm like, of course, what a place to go to start my life over again. So I suggested to my counselor, I heard that York had great recovery. She goes, as a matter of fact, it does. And I said, okay, I'll go to York. So I don't know what happened to that guy, but I wound up in York, and I had never heard of it, you know what I mean? And I got there, and I was like, what smells? And there's this paper factory, but it smells like broccoli. It's not, I don't even know. And And I drove in, like, as you're coming into Market Street, like, as you drive in, there's nice houses. And I'm like, okay, this isn't so bad. And as you keep going, I'm like, oh, we're just going through a rough section. We're going to, you know, pass right by this. And all of a sudden, they take a right. And I found myself on 136 East Cass Avenue. And it's that bad. This lady Beachy picks me up. She works for a gentleman that owns some houses there he's a great guy, but I was rude to him when I got there. And my mom told me to make sure I get documentation of all my paperwork when I'm at the office. I'm like, you know, a hot 30 days sober right out of rehab. And I'm going to make sure everything's in order. And and I'm like, well, my mom said that I have to get documentation of everything, you know? So I'm, like, driving him nuts. Like, the man's busy. And I'm like, can I use your printer? I mean, to make copies. Like, this sense of entitlement, glaring character defect that I didn't know. Like, I think I'm entitled to anything. I find out now I'm not, you know? Nothing, not even that coffee. I'm not entitled to any coffee. But I get into the house. I remember I fall off of the back of the truck trying to get my luggage out. I had like some luggage, I guess. But so I fall out of the truck and I thought, oh my God, I can't believe nobody's helping me, you know. And I fell off the truck and Vici wasn't helping me either. She just kind of laughed at me. And I go into the house, and I look around, and of course right away I need to, like, even arrange furniture. Like, I need to start rearranging stuff. Like, seriously, like, that's how I was. Like, who did I think I was, you know? And don't get me wrong, like, that comes up every once in a while, and thank God I am surrounded by some old heads that have more than willing to be like, shut up. And I hear it all the time. That's none of your business. That's none of your business. None of your business. What is that? None of your business. You know, I'm like, but none of your business, but nothing. You know what I mean? And I eventually got kicked out of that house. I did everything but drink or use. And then I found myself homeless in a place that I didn't know. And I've got, like, I think, like, 2.5 months or something like that. And then I got really sick. I had MRSA. So I'm homeless. I did get a job. I lost that job. Got kicked out of the recovery house. Got sick with MRSA. And and I was dating somebody, and definitely that didn't work out. Because I'm already dating somebody, like, because that's how good I am. I need, like, 5 minutes walking to a meeting. I'll think, you know, he sounds good, you know. Maybe I'll get it by osmosis. And maybe it'll rub off on me. And at that point, no job, no house, and I'm really sick, and I'm dumped by him, and only then did I look up and maybe I'm not doing it right. Maybe there's something wrong here. Because this is sober. You know, I got to take a lot of knocks, and a lot of knocks, and I don't know what it takes, but whatever it took. And then I finally asked this lady to sponsor me, because I had a sponsor that I was working with, but I thought I was going to teach her something, because I had 3.5 years and she only had 2, and I had such an extensive knowledge of the Big Book. But it's a cool thing that the Big Book tells me that you know, I can have it memorized. And we were talking earlier, I can sound like a parakeet. I can quote it all. Progress, not perfection, you know what I mean? As an excuse to do something that's wrong. And I know in my heart's wrong. And there's no words that's going to change that I know in my heart's wrong. Because there's a difference between what my head says and what my heart says. My heart won't lie. My head will constantly lie to me. So I asked Patty to be my sponsor. And she was little, and something was intimidating about her. I didn't know what it was, but I was going to figure her out. And there was, like, other women. I came in, and I thought I was intimidated, but actually I thought that they were, I'll just say, witches, and I thought that they were really mean, you know, and I'll show them, you know. And I told my grand sponsor at one time, I told her off because she said She said something in front of me like, thank God that one didn't ask me for help. And I'm like, well, do you know why I like you? Because you're a, you know what I mean? And just an idiot. But once I asked Patty, I knew all bets were off. Because I knew she had what I wanted. And it had nothing to do with her pink little jacket. And it had nothing to do with her car. But it had to be that people were drawn to her, and it's not because she was fake. And it's not because she, like, you know how you, like, beat people down to keep them around? As long as you think that they think that you're better than them, because that's how I always thought. If as long as I was convinced that you thought I was better than you, then we're cool. But if I thought you had one over on me, I was going to try to cut you down. And that's just honest. And but this woman was genuine, and she shot through my heart. And she looked right in my eyes, and I couldn't deny it. I couldn't deny it that she was just full of God. And I wanted it. I wanted it so bad. And I knew that she would not be impressed with my little new girl antics and my created drama by being the center of my own little world. So I asked her for help, and she brought me through the steps. And I went through them kind of quick, you know. And so did the co-founders. You know, I'm real sick. I didn't waste any time getting in and out there. I'm not going to waste any time getting in the solution in here. I don't want to be like that anymore. I want a life beyond my wildest dreams. I was sick of selling myself short. I was sick of my ideas. I was sick of playing the victim of my own self-centered decisions. There's no pity for me getting beat. Maybe that's what I needed to get beat into a state of reasonableness. Just part of my story. It just shows how insane we can be. Drunk or sober, because I was sober, stone cold sober. And he was my God. Now I have the pleasure of working with women, you know, and I have the pleasure of actually genuinely caring about another human being. Now I kind of thrive on trying to do stuff for other people, because the more I do, it frees me up inside. And if that's selfish, then so be it. But doing for others is the only thing that lets me breathe. The only time I don't feel like that pit bull's in my chest, ready to lash out. You know, I don't have $1 million. I work at Denny's, and I bust my little butt, and I've always gone back to serving because I know how to do that. I've been doing that since I was young. And you know what? It's good money. And I got a lot of amends, a lot of financial. If you're sitting here like it'll never happen, we all feel that way. Because the financial amends, like, chances are, I mean, I don't decide to get sober unless all resources run out anyway. So chances are I couldn't suck any more money at anybody else, you know? So I work there. I work on Fridays and Saturdays. I work this Friday and Saturday. I work at 5 at night, and I'm scheduled 5 at night till 4 in the morning. But usually I work 5 till like 6:30 in the morning. Like this Friday was 5 till 6:30 in the morning, and Saturday was 5 till I got out about 7:30 in the morning. And I get to break up fights with drunks. and it's kind of fun, you know what I mean? Like, because there's that sick side of me that, like, still enjoys it, you know? You know, these girls are going at it, and I'm like, all right, we got 2 choices. Because I give them choices. We needed, like, baby steps. You know what I mean? I don't know, but I think, like, alcoholics are a lot like kids. At least I was. You know what I mean? I'm like a little 3-year-old when I come in here, and I demand choices. I want to feel like I'm still in control, you know? And that's how I was sponsored. They're like, okay, well, you can do that, and that could happen, or you could do this, and this could happen. Go at it. What do you choose? You know? And what does your experience show you? You know, Virgin Mary. And so I, so gone. But so I work there, and you see, because I was never able to work those hours unless I had something to give me more incentive or keep me going. And today that's I guess I would call it the God juice. You know, I pray to him constantly, and I tell him, like, I can't do this. I can't pull a shift off like this without killing somebody. let alone practice any principles at my job, you know. But I get to be an example. There's a lot of, I work with, like, there's different kinds of drunks at different stages and at work, and there's ones that are still doing it and it's not working, you know what I mean, but they don't know what else to do and they're not ready to do anything else or willing yet. And there's ones that, like, just started out, you know, and it's still, like, kind of fun and the consequences aren't that bad yet. And they all kind of look at me like, I don't know, like a foreign concept. But, because I would look at me like a foreign concept. What do you mean you don't do anything? Like, doesn't everybody do at least something? You know what I mean? It's something to take the edge off. Like, I guess not everybody feels like they have to have edge off in life. You know, but I did. And, you know, I was blessed with a second vehicle. See, the same father that dropped me off 19 months ago in Easton at a homeless shelter is entrusting me with his vehicle. He got another one, and I'm still paying him for the loan. I wasn't allowed around my little sister, and they keep calling. I got to go to her birthday party, and I actually got to show up with a present, too. And I actually got to even show up, let alone even a present. Like, that mattered. You know, it's not the stuff, it's the time that matters to anybody. I'm welcome back into my father's home when I wasn't allowed there. I'm welcome back into my mother's house when they changed the locks, the codes, and I wasn't welcome. And the one thing they were paying for me to do was get far, far away from them, you know. And now they want me, whether I'm like, I can't afford it, they're like, well, we can, so you're coming out. And I don't wake up, don't get me wrong, I wake up some days and I can be angry, seemingly unrelated to anything. Just angry or scared, and I don't know why. But I got an action for that. I hit my knees right away. It's like non-negotiable. It's like, what do I have to lose? You know what I mean? I already felt crappy. I might as well hit my knees. You know what I mean? I didn't hit my knees for so long. Might as well try it. I find out that I'm powerless over a lot of things. I'm powerless over how people act and what they think. And it's none of my business. People are never going to act right, and that's okay, because I've also been shown and told that I am the common denominator in everything in my life. That means that I'm the problem. It means I'm also not the solution. I do have a life beyond my wildest dreams, because I can be in my own skin and not feel like I'm crawling out of it. I can look you in the eye today, and it's not out of arrogance. I get to front row seat. I heard a long time ago, front row seat to God's handiwork. Because there's a young lady that came with me here tonight, and a few months ago, she called me up because the radios were, she could hear the radios, and she was really paranoid and really scared, and I went to take her to the hospital, and she didn't want to stay there, but I said, well, this is where I'm taking you, and I gotta go. And I'm not taking you anywhere else, and I love you, and you can feel free to call me. And I gave her a hug, and she had a switchblade in her hand. But people were like, were you scared? Yeah, a little bit. But she knew that I wasn't the enemy, and I knew she was just scared. And she's not that girl today. And she's sharing experience, strength, and hope wherever she possibly can. And that's a miracle, you know. And I actually get to care about people, and to be asked to speak somewhere is huge. It makes me nervous. It always does. But I always hit my knees when I go to the bathroom before when I get here. Like, that's the first thing I do. I hit my knees. And I've always been shown, because when I come into a meeting too, I have a easy way of, like, looking around and see who's wearing what. Da 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 da. My mind just thinks like that. Oh, did they show up? Did they not show up? Oh my God! Can you look at her hair? Oh my God! Look at him! Da da da. So, like, I can't even keep up with my thoughts. No wonder they diagnosed me bipolar, like racing thoughts. But I also came out of that detox on 7 medications. Because I went in on 4, I came out on 7, and this is only a testimony of the God that I have. I'm not on anything. It's been a year and a half, and I haven't run through the lives of others. I've had to make a few amends, you know what I mean, because I thought something was my business, and I needed to let somebody know how to act. And then I later found out it wasn't, and that I had to go make it right to the best that I could. There's nothing like a 9-step, you know, in sobriety. You're just like, oh. It's one thing about like what you did when you were drinking, but when you do stupid stuff sober, it's, oh. I'm like, I just don't want to do that again. And I don't know. I'm really grateful that you guys asked me to come here. And if there's any women that want to talk after this, and you want my number, you're more than welcome. And hey, I talk to guys too, because Alcoholics Anonymous is Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm working principles today. I'm not trying to get a date, and it's not a dating service. I didn't know that. I didn't know it. I'm like, what? I come in here, it's not a dating service? I'm not supposed to find Mr. Right Now? Or the one? I don't get it. But I have to pray, like, when I walk into the meeting. I keep my head down, and I was always shown, like, during the, when you read the traditions and the 12 steps, to pray and ask God to remove anything that's going to block me off from sharing or hearing the message. And I just suggest it because it's given me a lot more peace. It's just, it's worked for me. I wouldn't suggest it if it doesn't. But I put my head down, and that's what I was shown. And there's just so many things that are so different today, and I am getting a life beyond my wildest dreams. And this is huge, and this is a blessing, and I thank you for having me come, and thanks.